Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight, and it is always a pleasure to talk to her, is Beata Sigridotta, poet, author of several novels and other writings, and we're talking about her latest, titled Circus Dancer. Beata, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thank you.
It's such a pleasure to talk to you again.
Yeah, good talking to you again also.
Now, let's talk about this collection, Circus Dancer.
All right.
Is this collection, would you call all of these poems or short pieces, or is there a name for what they are?
The name for them is prose poems.
Okay.
But I would just, in short, call them poems.
Because they really do seem like I'm reading a novel almost all the way through.
Yeah, and little philosophies and little sketches of what life is about.
Are they meant to be read linearly?
Pardon? Are they meant to be read
linearly?
Oh no!
But it's funny because I did. And I sort of strung together a whole story. Most of it's in my head.
Well, and that's kind of how you compose a collection. Now these were poems that were written at different times and in different moods and also in different modes. But once you try to put together a collection, you do kind of try to find something that has a thread going through it so that there is some kind of a overarching unity to it.
So maybe most of them appeared published in other places first?
Yes.
Now, why the name Circus Dancer? I know you love to dance.
That's a little bit on the memoir type side. I really remember the first time, you know, my dad took me to a circus. He loved circuses, and he took me, and I see this glittering creature on this elephant.
Oh wow!
You know, and I just, that's kind of what I wanted to be. But circus dancer, I think my idea is that our life is a little bit of a circus. So many different things happening, glamorous, non-glamorous, that kind of stuff. So I think a circus dancer is somebody who kind of has to transcend that multifaceted world and make one image out of it.
Yeah. And at the end, you have to get off the elephant.
Yeah, but then you do that privately. In public, you get to stand up there and dance.
Well, there are several of these pieces that talk about dancing, either even just in passing. So talk to me from your point of view about how you feel about dancing. I just get this feeling like you would like to just go out there and sort of waft around and do your own expressive dancing, but other people don't really like it because it's too expressive and too nonconformist.
Well, and, you know, I have spent about 20 years of my life as a ballroom dancer.
Oh, wow. So that changes everything.
I've done competitive dancing with one of my ex-husbands, and we were dancing was always kind of an interest of great interest to me. And then when I went to college, when I was in my I got to college late because I had to come over from Germany and do all of those convoluted things before I ended up here. But when I went to college, I was this total intellectual. But I was always writing about dancing and dreaming about dancing.
I love it.
One time it just occurred to me, well, that's all wrong. If you want to dance, then for God's sakes, dance. and I met this guy who was already a professional dancer, and we spent a lot of time dancing.
Wow. Wow. So you competed as a ballroom dancer. I never knew that.
Yes, but I was kind of typically in last place or close to it.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You get out there, yeah. And ballroom dancing is so expressive.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one thing that hindered me in dancing was that, again, when I was very young, I didn't have any ballet lessons. I danced for my grandmother, but that's about the extent of my early dancing training. And so I was a little bit behind, but it was really a fantastic experience.
Oh, wow. Many of these pieces have an interesting, and I don't know if I'm going to say the right word, but it's sort of a melancholy to them. Would you consider that true?
Yes, it is. And I think that is just one of the other things that comes out of my own personal expression. I would love to be the life of the party. I would love to be some glittering creature, sort of like a Celine Dion on stage. But unfortunately, I'm not. I have a very deep melancholy streak. And I think most of that comes from, you know, I think a lot of the poems go into that. I'm living in two worlds.
Yeah.
I really love this world. And I see so much tragedy in it. And in some sense, most of the tragedy that I see isn't necessarily personal. I have to say I had a pretty lenient life, you know, mm-hmm. but I see so much ugliness out there, so much just willingness to create, to fuel hatred and things like that. And so I see that world, and I look out of the window and I see just this beautiful natural world. And yes, there is tough things in it. You know, I have lizards out in my yard, and every once in a while some roadrunner gets them or some owl comes along, you know. Yeah. And
it's not the same kind of violence.
The beautiful reality is not always pretty, but there is something wonderful about it. But then I see deliberate ugliness, you know.
Yeah, I think it's very two very different kinds of things. First of all, I want to add that I'm very jealous of the fact that you get to see lizards all the time, because here in Massachusetts we have no lizards.
Oh, yeah, it's too cold.
And you live in the desert.
Yeah.
So you got lizards all around you. And
Yeah.
So much of the natural world figures into these pieces, too. Just the absolute beauty of watching the sunrise.
Yeah.
And the beauty, you mentioned lizards a lot, and I to the point where I thought you were purposely rubbing my nose in it.
Oh, no. I'll mention tarantulas instead and scorpions.
I love scorpions. We don't have scorpions here either. I really deeply love lizards, but in lieu of lizards, I get to see snakes, and so that's fine. But I just love the fact how natural history becomes part of your everyday world and figures into these pieces. Back to being lonely and being alone, or being alone by yourself, or being the quiet one at a party. It sometimes seems in these pieces that there's a conflict. You also really enjoy, at times, being by yourself, having no other responsibility other than yourself. But at the same time, it conflicts with you wanting to be, as you mentioned, to be out there in the life of the party.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's an interesting kind of concept, because when you go to I did one huge writing workshop when I was in college, and I've gone to a few workshops and stuff since, and the idea is always there has to be conflict for it to be interesting. And of course, for the last 40 years, I've been trying to say, no, there doesn't have to be conflict. Peace can be beautiful and non-conflict. But then I realized that within me, I always have some kind of a civil war. You know, I want to be, I want to be loved, and I want to be left alone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That comes out in several of your pieces in this collection.
Yeah.
That's a big conflict. That's a huge conflict. On the other hand, in one of your pieces, I think it was on page 8, you said, it's okay she decides to amble in ambivalence. And so you're comfortable with the fact that you're ambivalent.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in the end, that's how you need to navigate the world, because you are going to be ambivalent about, okay, you know,
okay.
I think it's in this book, I'm not quite sure now, but I have a line about how I never asked to be born and now I don't want to die.
Right.
You know, it's like, I didn't want this, but now I don't want to leave it.
But that's so real for all of us, I think, if we really think
right.
about it and if we
exactly.
really look inside.
Exactly.
But that's you being comfortable with that conflict and ambivalence.
Right.
Could I ask you to read a piece?
Sure. I'll read one. This is from my working days. I'm basically retired, which means I get to work on my writing all day long. And unfortunately, I don't, because otherwise I would have 200 volumes of books now.
Well, wait, if I can make an aside, you do have a lot of things that have been published, though. You do
yeah.
write a lot.
I do write a lot, but of course, for my taste, conflict, never enough.
So wait a minute, hold it before you start reading. So you really enjoy some kind of internal conflict. You enjoy that.
Well, yeah.
Is that one of your muses is conflict?
I hadn't thought about it that way at all, but yes, it probably is when you think about it, because if I were just always serene and
yeah, you wouldn't write
accepting of everything, I would look out of the window and just watch the
lizards
jump and the lizards and the scorpions.
Yeah, that's the conflict. Like Buddhist monks probably wouldn't make great writers.
Would or would not?
Would not.
Would not.
Because they're serene and are comfortable just sitting there and looking and being.
Except I'm not sure. I'm not certain quite how to pronounce his name. Thich Nhat Hanh.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He did a lot of writing, and I haven't read everything of his, but some of it is very... very profound but of course he addresses conflict. Yeah.
Okay, read, please read.
Okay, so this is from my working days. I was working as a legal secretary.
Oy.
So
I can't see you in that job.
Pardon?
I can't see you in that job.
Oh, I was all right.
Well, I knew you'd be good at it, but it just seems too staid.
It was pretty hectic, you know. You have to deal with all of these. I sometimes thought my job was ego management.
Oh,
And talking about other egos rather than my own.
Okay, no more digressions. You can read.
Okay. And so this poem is called Morning Routine.
Mm.
She is in love with a life that should have been different. She listens to her alarm clock sing, gets ready to join the other secretaries, wondering just where and why and how they had landed in this maze of things, swinging on the complicated trapeze between typing, laundry, and poetry. On rare occasions, a night out dancing. If it looks like sadness, it probably is. She read in a woman's magazine the result of a poll asking men what they thought of women who left their apartment with hair still wet from the shower. Low maintenance or lazy? She can't remember the percentage of responses for each, but was puzzled that nobody had thought of asking about busy. 2 days ago, she found a glass vase in the shape of a swan with a single red rose at the grocery store. The rose is still fragrant and red. No wonder she loves life. It is not a mistake, even if everybody is doing everything all wrong. A man once told her she smiled too much. She always thought that was what she was supposed to do. Meanwhile, her poor ego sits in the corner, all folded up and sagging, knowing it would, as usual, get blamed for everything. Maybe all her sighs are dreaming of being songs. There, her hair is still damp, but it is definitely time to go. If it looks like rage, it probably is. She folds it as small as possible, throws it into her briefcase on top of a hasty sandwich, and takes off into the day. The elevator smells like shoe polish. Is it too late to become a bitch?
I can never picture you that. Although I can picture you having lots of rage, for sure. That's an amazing piece. And it's so evocative. I mean, and I think the other thing I appreciate you is that there is a feminine and feminist at times perspective in your work that really is informative to me. It's a voice I don't hear a lot. And I really feel privileged to hear that.
Well, thank you.
Now, what I realized when I read this book, there were almost on every single page, there were just lines that I underlined because they just seemed so apt. Part of it is, you know, I'm old. I'm not getting old. I am old. And I think there's a certain perspective that comes with age that's different than when you're in your sort of youthful cavalier kind of way. And I'm just going to read every once in a while. Because she's running out of time, it takes so much of the day just to be mortal. I think that was from the first page. That sense of like everything's passing by so quickly and I'm just spending my time doing the things that it is that keep me in the game here. And you sort of want to be able to stop the clock and then just sit down for several hours and just look at things. I don't know what I think I'm reading my inner poetry to you. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Now, go ahead.
That's what I really like. What I would like to do with my poetry is to actually evoke other people's inner poetry. You know, you read an image or you see a line and it opens up something in you.
Yeah,
what I want.
That's exactly what these did for me. Now, the other, there are several important themes that just sort of run through all these pieces. You definitely wrestle with spirituality a lot. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah. Spirituality to me is something that I have always yearned for. And again, it's an inner civil war. It's inner conflict. What I grew up with, my dad was a lay evangelist, and I had to study the Bible pretty carefully to be able to hold my own with him because he'd have these Bible verses and blah blah blah, and I had to know something that could the Bible is full of contradictions, so I had to find the appropriate contradiction that would be in my favor.
Okay, this is starting to explain a lot.
and very early on, I had my problems with God because, you know, being I grew up Lutheran, but it doesn't really matter what brand of Christianity you grow up in, but the message I got is that all of these children in places in the world that could not be baptized, well, what was going to happen to them? You know, when I was a child, I was obviously a children's advocate, just like...
Well, those are exactly the questions that children come up with all the time, and then you sort of don't dare ask those questions.
Yeah, and no, and you don't get any satisfying answers when you do ask,
Well, that's a lot like you. There's a great line in Fireflies, which is on page 19. God is always on her mind, and she isn't even sure God exists.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly how that works because, okay, you know, God as an adult or as a child, how can God possibly have created all this and then let it come to this? You know, we're always in political upheaval and we're always in warfare and to me that's just I get the philosophical thing about it, God has given us freedom of will, and at the same time, to me that it freedom of Hitler, freedom of
The list is endless right now.
Yeah.
Now I want to move on to a happier line. There's a line that just made me laugh out loud. Because, you know, I was thinking about the poets community where you are, and there's a line in one of your poems, she liked the poet's long blonde hair better than she liked his poems.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he was really beautiful.
And it was definitely better than his poetry.
Yeah, but his poetry wasn't bad. It's just like...
That his hair was better.
What was attractive about him was his long hair.
There's a line that also really meant a lot to me as a person who reads a lot, and it's you write that, will anything ever enchant her again the way her first library books did at age 7? And that really brought me back to that age and to taking out just tons of books from the library all the time and reading them, and how amazing they were the first time that you read things like, for me it was things like H.G. Wells and Jules Verne. Stuff like that just blew me away. I mean, it changed my life forever.
Yeah, it's like you can go on these journeys with these fascinating creatures that most of the time aren't even real; they're fictional.
Yeah.
But you get to go with them, and you get to have adventures, and yeah.
No book affects you later on in life the way that the books do at that point in time. I don't know. What's the last book that you read that really affected your life?
That really affected my life. Okay, I reread a book recently. Sometimes. You know, I want that beautiful feeling again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The last book that I reread that really was very magical for me is called Women and Nature by a woman named Susan Griffin.
And what kind of a book is it?
it's I would call it feminist philosophy. She's also a poet. This book was written, I think, in the 1980s, maybe as early as the late 1970s. It's a very poetic book. Putting women into the contemporary world at that time, and I have to say, it really hasn't changed all that much. But what she holds is, this is a very quick nutshell, and the book is like 300 pages long.
Wow.
But what she holds is that male, as in masculine, intellectualism has kind of separated us from the natural world, and it's looking down on the natural world as though it is completely unimportant. You know,
or beneath us. I've read essays by women philosophers and scientists about things like that, that the way that the male view looks at nature is to look at it as like a thing that they could figure out.
It's a thing that they could figure out, it's a convenience.
Well, I'll tell you what's not convenient is we're all out of time.
Right.
My guest, returning guest tonight, and again, always a pleasure. We get lost in our talking to each other. Is Beata? Is that the pronunciation?
Sigurdardottir.
Poet, author of several novels, which are quite nice, by the way, I can say, and other writings. And we're talking about her latest, and it really is worthwhile. It's something to spend some nice time alone outside to read. It's called Circus Dancer. Yeah, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.